You ever noticed how when you're faced with something you need to do, but you're not really eager to do it, the road from here to there can feel especially arduous? It's easy to assume there's some force at work here. In fact, pop culture might have us believe that there's some invisible law of procrastination. Personal experience often suggests that the less we want to do something, the harder it is. But is that grounded in truth? Isn't that a bit like concluding that the sun actually rises in the east and sets in the west? Sure, that may be the way things appear, of course, but the sun's not actually rising and falling every day. There's something much bigger at work, an actual law. And if you understand it, well, imagine the possibilities. Not even the sky is the limit. Hey there, and welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm David Brown. That spiritual lens is important because when our perspective is grounded in truth, that is, seeing things as they really are, not as they seem to be, we're in a much better place to move forward, get more done, accomplish more, reach every goal, and even discover new opportunities. Our guest today has been doing a lot of thinking about this very issue. Bob Cochran is a Christian Scientist from Ashburn, Virginia. Bob, welcome to Sentinel Watch.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
What got you thinking about the best way forward here? What was there, some experience you had recently?
Not long ago, I came across a quote in Science and Health by Mary Baker Eddy, the Christian Science textbook. I know I must have seen it before, probably many times, but for some reason it really caught my attention this time. And the quote is this: "The discoverer of Christian Science," talking about herself, "finds the path less difficult when she has the high goal always before her thoughts than when she counts her footsteps in endeavoring to reach it." So that got me thinking, what is the high goal that she's talking about? How can we keep it always before our thought?
Of course, a lot of Christian Scientists know that the full title of Mary Baker Eddy's book is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And the reason that book is so special is that it's the result of years of spiritual searching by the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, the author, Mary Baker Eddy. And she really dug deep into the Bible and brought out these spiritual truths that millions of people around the world have found healing from. And clearly, Bob, something struck you about what she was saying here. Say more about what it was that struck you about that, because it almost stands to reason, right, that if you're thinking about, you know, where you want to get, that's easier, you're going to get there faster, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, if you don't know what the goal is, you're not going to get there. That's pretty clear. So the first question that I had was, what high goal is she talking about? What is this high goal? So I looked up some of the things she says about goals, and there were a number of things. She talks about perfection as a goal of existence. She talks about goodness as a goal of existence. And the one that meant the most to me was she talked about the grand necessity of existence is to gain the true idea of what constitutes the kingdom of heaven in man. And I like that because, first of all, the kingdom of heaven is such a beautiful phrase. It sounds wonderful. And also it fits in with what Jesus told us: seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. That's the most important thing. So I like that, and I sort of follow that up a little bit. And what is the kingdom of heaven would be the next question, and we could spend a lot of Sentinel Watch podcasts on that issue. But the thing that Mrs. Eddy uses over and over again for the kingdom of heaven is the reign of harmony, that expression. It's the reign of harmony. Harmony is a thing we can define, I think, as love, peace, beauty, those sort of qualities would be in the kingdom of heaven. And that's our goal, to get there. Jesus told us the kingdom of heaven is within us, so it's not a place, of course. It's a state of consciousness. And that's our goal, to reach that state of consciousness. We're taught in Christian Science that, in fact, we already are there, which sounds like a contradiction, but the journey we seem to be on is not from one place to another, but a mental, spiritual journey of realizing what is already true. It's a discovery, a revelation. And that's what we're trying to do. That's the high goal, I think.
Bob, I want to back up for just a moment because what you're saying sounds very lofty. It also sounds theoretical. And I'm wondering, as a practical matter, how do you see this applying in everyday life?
Well, let me give you an experience I had, David, which may set the stage for answering that question. It's a wonderful healing I had a long time ago when I was a teenager, and I talked about it on an earlier podcast, and I'll try to do a shorter version this time. It was in the summer between school years, and I very badly sprained my ankle. I saw it bend at a very severe angle. I heard a crackling sound, and very quickly, it was swollen, painful, couldn't put weight on it, et cetera, very badly sprained ankle. Well, football season was just around the corner. So in addition to wanting this ankle to be healed, I was also very worried about playing football. Would I be able to? Well, I called a Christian Science practitioner to work with me, and I began to pray. I was a Christian Scientist. I'd been raised in Christian Science. I had had a couple of healings before this. So I was, you know, thinking this would be healed too. And I began to work with some of the ideas that science and health gives us about the definition of man. And that it's always man is not material. He's spiritual, not made up of bones and blood and ligaments and all that. That is not our real identity. We're image. We're idea. That's man. And I began to let those ideas sink into my thought. I began to feel, I would say, hopeful and even expectant of good from this situation. And then I was hit with a thought, which I guess had been lurking in the back of my mind. If this is sprained, then okay, no problem. That can be healed. What if it's broken? Huh. That could be a problem. And right on the heels of that thought came what we would call an angel message in Christian Science, a wonderful, uplifting thought, true thought, straight from God, from divine mind. And it was this: hey, man, you just got through spending an hour reading and working and praying with the idea that you're spiritual. What difference does it make? You don't have a material broken ankle, a material sprained ankle, or a material perfectly well ankle. You don't have material anything. You're spiritual. And that may sound theoretical, but in that moment, it was not theoretical to me. I absolutely understood it. It seemed so natural and so clear that I accepted it completely. It was a wonderful moment. And the next thing I knew, the pain was out of my ankle. The swelling and the discoloration diminished right before my eyes. I got up and walked. I was fine. It was healed.
Wow.
That all happened very quickly. Now, here's what I've been thinking about lately. After that healing, I could have said, what a fantastic gift this religion is, a marvelous teaching. I need to redouble my efforts to study and understand it. I need to become a better, more consistent healer, and maybe even learn to help others. I could have said those things. What I actually did say was, great, now I can play football again. So now, to be clear, there's nothing wrong with playing football, but it's a question of where was my mental energy? Where was my focus? And it was not, I'm afraid, on the high goal. It was on the effect it had on my everyday life, which was fine. It was beautiful and good, but there was another level available there to my thinking and my thought that I didn't take. I didn't go to it. Well, I was young. I'm not beating myself up for it, but it was there, and I didn't really see it. I didn't really understand it, didn't grasp it. And many years later, as I began to think about it a little differently, I recalled the story of Jacob in the Bible. And that was something that I'd read many times also, but now I thought about it a little differently. And briefly, for those who may not be familiar with it, Jacob was a patriarch in the Old Testament. He did some things he shouldn't have done when he was younger. He cheated his brother out of a lot of money. And a reckoning was coming. He had to meet his brother again after many years, and he was afraid. So the night before he was going to meet his brother, an angel came to him, we're told, or a man, it says in the Bible, but I think most people think it's an angel. And he wrestled with it, we're told, all night until the breaking of the day. Now, breaking of the day just means the sun's coming up, but I also think there's maybe a deeper meaning to it. The breaking of the day is
kind of a dawning, it sounds like.
Yes, yes, a dawning.
Yeah.
A dawning on his thought. And maybe he would be okay. Maybe his problems would be taken care of. So the angel in the story says to him, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." But Jacob said, "I will not let thee go, except thou bless me." And the angel did bless him. Now, Mary Baker Eddy takes a look at that story, and she interprets it to mean it wasn't enough for Jacob that his problem was solved. He wanted his nature to be transformed.
Hmm.
He wanted growth. He wanted to become a different person.
Yeah.
And he did. The angel gave him a new name in recognition of that. Whereas I didn't quite rise to that level. I think if I'd been in Jacob's shoes, the angel said, "Let me go for the day breaketh," I would have said, "Great, now I can go back to my flocks," or whatever he was doing.
Yeah.
That's not what Jacob did. And I began to think the attitude Jacob had, his spiritual approach, has got to be what we do. It has to be our thinking and our way of living. As Christian Scientists, we have to be thinking in terms of our nature being transformed instead of solving our problems as we go along. I think there's a tendency sometimes in Christian Science, and it does solve problems, there's no question about that, but to think that the point of Christian Science is to solve our problems and give us a comfortable life. I mean, we don't quite put it like that because it doesn't sound right, but that's what's going on in our thinking. And I think you can flip that, as I think Jacob did. I'm sure he didn't think of it in these terms, but instead of trying to use Christian Science to solve our problems, maybe we could use our problems to become better Christian Scientists and more effective healers.
Interesting. To see them as opportunities and not so much as something to be fixed.
Yes. And we have that example in Paul, St. Paul from the New Testament, who had he had a couple of statements that when I first read them, I thought, what's he talking about? He said he takes pleasure in infirmities, and he glories. He glories in tribulations. And I thought, this guy's nuts. I don't.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, who wants to do that?
Exactly.
But he explains it. When I am weak, then I am strong. When I'm forced to turn to God, when I'm forced to depend on God, that's when I make progress. That's when I succeed. Not just in the things he was trying to do humanly, but in terms of his spiritual transformation, like Jacob. So if we could look at life more like that, I think we would do better. You know, and it's funny because outside of Christian Science or any religion, people seek challenges all the time.
Yeah.
If they want to improve at something, right? If you want to become a great athlete, you want to go up against other great athletes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may lose a few. You will, but you want to go up against them. That's how you improve. If you want to be a great lawyer, you're going to take the toughest cases. You want to be a great actor, you can take the most difficult parts, and so forth. But within Christian Science, we often don't look at it that way. We think challenges, we try to avoid them. Well, I do. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people feel that way. And a lot of times when we're praying, we're thinking, oh, maybe this will stop any bad thing from happening. Mrs. Eddy said one time, in terms of spiritual progress, if blessings wouldn't do it, kicking would. I've had both, she said.
So, right. So, I love how sometimes she can just say something that just gets right to it. You know, I've had both.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. So I think, okay, well, if Mrs. Eddy got a few kickings, I'm sure we're not going to get by without some kickings. But that's okay. They are opportunities, you said, to grow. We have to have the Jacob thought.
But I'm curious about how you understand the angel there in that story of Jacob, because sometimes angels are depicted as almost a cherub-like beings. Of course,
yes.
That's And maybe you can explain how you understand angel.
Well, the Bible actually uses the term man, but I don't think anybody, Christian Scientist or not, who reads that story, thinks a man showed up and wrestled with Jacob. Mm-hmm. So it's a stand-in for something. And I think he was alone, as far as we can tell. So the wrestling was all mental. So what he was wrestling with was the fear he had, I think, and the guilt he felt from the things he'd done in his life. And I think the angel was, we think in Christian Science, angels are messages from God or thoughts from God that come to us to help us and inspire us. So the angel was helping him work through what was troubling him to the dawning, as it says, the daybreak. So I think the angel was an impartation, Mrs. Eddy says, a thought from God, a message from God, helping him through this dark night.
Mrs. Eddy, in fact, defines angels in glossary in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And she explains it this way. She says, God's thoughts passing to man.
Yes.
Spiritual intuitions. It sounds like that's what you're sort of identifying
exactly
here. A spiritual intuition. And she goes on, which I'm really struck by, pure and perfect. So that's a characteristic of this idea. Pure and perfect, the inspiration of goodness. So it's not a belief that you're going to be defeated, for example. It has the characteristics of goodness, purity, and immortality, counteracting all evil, sensuality, and mortality. So that gives you a good way of thinking about, well, what are these thoughts? Because quite often when we're faced with a situation like what you were describing with your ankle, you can sometimes feel like you're flooded by thoughts. But when you do get that inspiration of good, seize it. It's a wonderful opportunity to seize it. And perhaps that gets back to this idea of a challenge as being an opportunity. It's not a way of thinking around or thinking about or cogitating over what this situation is. It's being open to that divine inspiration, really.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. And I think in my ankle situation, you could describe it as an angel thought that came to me and said, it doesn't matter what the human picture is, what the mortal picture is. That's not you. That was an angel thought.
How do you identify that high goal? I'm sure you must have had a lot of high goals in life, and I think most of us would believe that we've had goals that we've wanted to reach and often felt rather triumphant after, you know, climbing that mountain.
Yeah.
And maybe giving ourselves a little credit along the way. But how do you see the high goal? And are we talking about one thing, or are we talking about a series of different goals as we sort of climb a ladder of success in a way through life?
Well, I know exactly what you're saying, what you're asking, but I think the goal that Mrs. Eddy's talking about are spiritual goals. They're goals of spiritual growth. You know, she has a wonderful chapter in the book Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures entitled Footsteps of Truth.
Uh-huh, right.
Yeah, so each footstep, it's not level, I don't think. It's a climb. Each footstep brings us a little higher in our understanding of God and our understanding of truth. I mean, the high goal, this is going to sound crazy, but I'll say it anyway. The high goal ultimately is ascension out of the belief of material life, or to put it more positively, into a complete understanding of spiritual life. What she says, the grand necessity of existence, necessity, not a good idea, it's a necessity of existence, is to gain the true idea of what constitutes the kingdom of heaven and man. So that's the high goal, ultimately, to no longer think of ourselves as material and limited and living in matter and all the limitations that matter has. That's not who we really are, and our goal is to realize that and move past it in our thinking.
We're seizing upon our being not as a series of things that we've done humanly, but seizing upon this idea of ourselves, our very nature as being spiritual.
Exactly right. And all the things we should expect, you know, to have good experiences and have successes, but they are not the ultimate measure. The underlying spiritual reality of what we're doing is what matters. I mean, somebody who spends their life, for example, healing people as a Christian Science practitioner may not look successful to the outside world, but it's hard to imagine a more successful life than somebody who heals other people's diseases and problems.
You touched on something that I think is important for us to loop back on. You mentioned that it may sound crazy, this idea of ascension. And I can remember a particular time when once I was out riding a motorbike and had had a crash. And this was when I was a teenager, and I went inside to see my dad. And he began to talk with me about, you know, telling me truths that I had learned in Sunday school. And I frankly felt a little discouraged by the fact that, you know, he was telling me these truths, and in a way, it didn't seem applicable to the fact that I was really, I felt in pain, you know, I was scraped up and really bunged up. And so, you know, the idea that I would be reaching for ascension seems very discouraging indeed. And yet, the reason that this experience stands out to me is that in the course of that conversation, being the impetuous teenager that I was, I pushed back against my dad and said, "Oh, come on. I mean, look at me." And he said, "Yeah, I'm looking at you. You are perfect, complete, whole, free right now." And it just was like something written on a wall. Boom, here you are. And it wasn't the words that he said that brought about the healing. It was that I glimpsed that I wasn't this flesh and blood just for a moment.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Just for that moment.
Yep.
And it was enough of a pause that I could grasp that I was bigger than whatever materiality defined me as. And in that moment, I was able to grow spiritually and see myself as not hindered, not trapped in a body. I remember that being particularly unique and feeling immediately elevated. And of course, I was able to walk away laughing. You know, my dad reminded me of that quite a few times too, I must
That's
add.
That's fantastic. That's great. That's wonderful.
You said something else, Bob, that I want to loop back and ask you about. You said, and correct me if I'm misstating what you were suggesting, that sometimes there's this temptation as students of Christian Science to think of Christian Science as a way of sort of making our lives comfortable. And I do think that some of us, we've had impressive healings in the past, and we certainly rely on it for healing. But I want you to dig into that a little deeper, because I don't want someone to feel like, no. When you're facing some moment of distress or some problem, that you shouldn't approach Christian Science. That's quite the opposite.
Yes. I'm glad you are clarifying this. To me, I think it's a question of how we define healing. Let me put it this way. In your motorcycle situation with my ankle, what was the healing?
Ultimately for me, and I recognize this now, it was getting beyond myself as being defined by a series of actions leading to an accident and the scraped up body and all of that. The healing ultimately was seeing myself in a new light, in a spiritual light, and one that was connected to the ultimate cause, the only creator, God, good. That was profound for me.
I think that's a great definition. And I think that is, if we're seeking that as healing, we're 100% on the right track. That has to be our goal, achieving that feeling, not getting rid of the problem. It's funny because that gets rid of the problem. But if we're focused on the problem, we cannot achieve that healing that you just described. The healing happens in our thought. If we're trying to fix matter, it's not going to work, because ultimately there is no matter. I mean, matter is it's a false belief. You can't fix a false belief. You can't do anything to it. But we can accept the truth into our thought. When we accept truth, the false belief goes away. Just like when you solve a math problem, the wrong answer disappears. Where did it go? Well, nowhere. It was never anywhere but in our thinking. So when we stop believing in a material situation, we don't see it anymore because it was never anything but a belief. Mm-hmm. So the healing is always, as I understand it, the healing is always in our thought, in our consciousness. That's where the healing takes place. And then because there's a law that says our experience is the expression of our thought, our experience changes. But the healing takes place in our thought. And as we're doing that, then we should turn to Christian Science not only when we want a healing, but all the time. And that's kind of what struck me about Mrs. Eddy's, the first quote that I mentioned. She tries to keep the high goal always before her thoughts, not only when she has a problem or a challenge, but always. And that, I think, is a useful notion. You know, the writer C.S. Lewis, the Christian writer C.S. Lewis?
Yeah.
Has a funny little thing in one of his essays. And he says Christians can sometimes be like taxpayers. You know taxes are necessary. You know they're a good thing. Civilization depends on it. You fill out your tax forms honestly. You write the check for the proper amount. You send it off to the government. And then you kind of want to get on with your life.
Yeah.
Right? And if you have a problem, well, you might call the police or the fire department. You call the government because you paid your taxes.
Right.
And I feel like I know I can slip into this as a Christian Scientist sometimes. I think the Christian Science version of that is, well, look, I love God. I love Christian Science. I love the church. I go to church regularly. I read the lesson. I read the periodicals. I pray. I serve on committees. I pay my taxes. And the rest of the time, I kind of like to do my own thing. I mean, I just like to live. If I have a problem, oh, I turn to God.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting phrase. I turn to God. Where were you turned before that?
Yeah.
Right? What were you looking at before that? Yeah. But you turn to God. Yeah. And indeed, we do find healing. And we struggle sometimes. And we do find healing. And then, for me anyway, all too often, my attitude is, great, now I can play football again.
Mm-hmm,
you know, I'm back to my mundane, everyday life without really keeping that high goal of spiritual ascension in front of me. In fact, some years ago, I don't know why, but I had this sort of, I guess, thought experiment popped into my head. It's very fanciful and almost silly, but I took it seriously. What if an angel appeared in front of me and said, hey, Bob, you've done well lately. We're going to make you a special offer. You can ascend right now, like Jesus, like Elijah, right now, if you come with me.
Hmm.
What do you say? Well, I thought about this. What would I say? Well, I wouldn't say no, because I know that's not the right answer. But would I say yes? What would I say? Honestly, I think I would have said, now? Right now?
Yeah, I got some stuff that I'd really like to do between now and then.
Yeah, exactly. I would say, listen, that sounds great, but, you know, I've got a family, got a job, I got things to do down here. What about, you know, come back a little later? those right? I know I would have had that reaction. Well, the angel would have been long gone before he even finished the sentence, but that's the thing. And, you know, that's something that's been around forever. Jesus has that great parable. He tells about the wealthy man who gives a feast, and he invites all his friends, and one by one, they can't make it. One guy, I think, bought some land. Another guy just bought a team of oxen. Another guy got married. And they all have a reason why they can't come, and that's the human mind.
Yeah, it's this argument, it's this claim that life is the trappings of, you know, place and a sense, a material-based sense of life. It's fascinating that in that same paragraph we've been talking about on page 426 of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, the way Mrs. Eddy ends this paragraph, and I think this speaks to what you're describing. She says, When it is learned that disease cannot destroy life and that mortals are not saved from sin or sickness by death, this understanding will quicken into newness of life. It will master either a desire to die or a dread of the grave, and thus destroy the great fear that besets mortal existence. What she seems to be saying is that rather than being afraid of losing something in this process of spiritual growth, understand that this is newness of life. This is genuine progress, not death. You know, it's like that moment in healing when you see beyond whatever the physical experience is and you feel genuinely uplifted and the healing has taken place. That feeling of genuine uplift, you can describe it as a kind of relief, but it's a sense of elevation. And so you're not really being asked in the course of spiritual progress to die and be born again, in a sense. But it is a refreshment, a renewal that happens, I think, is a more accurate way of thinking about it.
Yes. Okay. And you imagine living your whole life in that place that you just described?
Mm.
That must be what Jesus, in effect, did. He didn't reach those places that you were talking about, those elevated places, those moments of inspiration from time to time, as I think most of us feel that we do. He must have stayed there.
And, of course, he encouraged all of his followers to do greater works than his.
Yes, exactly.
Which is saying a lot about his expectation and his insight.
Yeah. He said, be ye therefore perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect. He didn't say, do your best. He said, be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven has been. That's our goal. Spiritually perfect, not humanly perfected, but spiritually perfect. I'd like to share a very small experience. It also happened when I was a kid. I've had other healing since high school, but anyway, this is another one. This is another one that happened. And I think this time I came a little closer to Jacob, a little bit. I was in a swimming pool and getting out of the pool, the guy ahead of me swung his leg over to get out of the pool and he kicked me in the mouth by accident.
Mm.
But it hurt and it drove my lip into my teeth and opened a cut that started bleeding, and I could feel the swelling start, and he didn't even know he'd done it. He was gone. But I had an immediate reaction, short term. I was angry. I was angry at him for not being more careful. I was angry at myself for not being more careful, that I was gonna have to go through, I don't know, the next week or so with a cut inside of my mouth, which would make it painful to eat and talk, two of my favorite things. So I just was really, my mind was a perfect stew of aggravation. And I can honestly say, I thought, I don't want to feel this. I completely put the cut and the blood and all that out of my thought. I just thought, I don't want to go through the day like this. I don't want to feel this way for another second. It's so distasteful. It's so unpleasant. It's so ugly. I do not want this feeling. What can I do about it? And of course, the answer was, well, love. Love is it's always the answer. It's always an answer and a good one. So I thought, well, all right, what does that mean? Well, it means forgiving this other kid. He hadn't done it on purpose, which helped. But I should have been able to forgive him anyway, but this was easier. He hadn't done it. And I forgave myself for the carelessness. And I just let those feelings of forgiveness blossom into a real wonderful sense of well-being, of loving and being surrounded by love.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very wonderful feeling. And all the aggravation just left. And honestly, I was shocked to realize, oh, it doesn't hurt anymore. There's no blood. I ran my tongue over the place where seconds before there'd been a cut. There was nothing. It was perfectly smooth.
Wow.
So that was an amazing moment for me But the reason that I think it's a little different than the ankle was I never started out in that moment to heal anything but my thought. Mm-hmm. I wanted my thought to be transformed. I wanted to feel the love of God. I wanted to feel truth. I wanted to feel the power of love and the power of spirit. And that's all I wanted.
That's where you started. That's the important
thing. That's where I started. That's what I'm getting at, exactly. That's where I started. And of course, the healing did happen because it has to. But to start there and not, as I feel I frequently do, work my way up through the material situation and finally get it out of my mind and then begin the healing, that's what it feels like sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this I started. Doesn't Mercedes say so much to begin rightly, stand rightly?
Yeah.
That's what that felt like, and I'd like to be able to do that more often. But that was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Bob, it has been such a joy getting to talk with you again. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us on Sentinel Watch. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thanks very much, David. I've enjoyed it.
Bob Cochran is a Christian Scientist from Ashburn, Virginia. Are you planning on attending the 2026 annual meeting of the Mother Church? It's Monday, June 8th in Boston, and also online. Hear reports from officers of the Mother Church and the field, along with an exploration of this year's theme, Ye Are the Light of the World. Let your light so shine. Register at christianscience.com/annual meeting. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm David Brown. Our podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richman. Our production assistant is Natasha Telsho. Our editor is Lisa Rennie Seitzma. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. We'll talk again soon.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.